Okay.
Let's go.
So let's call the Library Joint Powers Authority Board of Monday, July 11th, 2011, to order. Before we start the roll call, I just want to report out on our closed session. We did meet with the HR Director of Santa Cruz and discussed labor negotiations as well as the library transition, staffing transition that we are going through. And we got a lot of information from the director, and we provided some direction to her as well, but no decisions were made. So let's do a roll call.
Supervisor Peary. Citizen Gert.
Here.
Citizen Gorson.
Here.
Council Member Byers.
Here.
Citizen Portinger.
Here.
Council Member Reed.
Here.
Council Member Terrazas.
Here.
Supervisor Stone. Council Member Story.
Here.
All right, we have an agenda in front of us. Someone need approval?
Motion to approve.
Second.
Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. We have minutes of our June 6, 2011 meeting as well. Any issues or changes?
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed?
Abstain.
Motion passes. Oral communications?
I'm just going to say. We had a wonderful First Friday event last month, and I sent each of you a message. I hope you all got it. Double what we had the previous month, so we're up to almost 100 people came through. It was really, really a great, great event. And next month, we're going to feature the staff art. Anybody, a former or current staff member, they're submitting art. We have poets and weavers and printmakers, oil painters, you name it, they do it. So I hope you'll stop by. A lot of it will be in here or in the cases out there, the cases of jewelry.
I think it's such a good idea for the library to participate in that.
Thank you. We're excited because it's hard to get people, this, it doesn't seem far away from the city, but it is, I guess. And so to have this kind of traffic, this far from the
you could let them bring their dogs.
not yet.
And I'm in contact with Cruz IO and hoping to get they occasionally have had the First Friday event also. So we're all hoping to do some sort of joint publicity when they do things.
There's been several First Friday events at the Cruz IO building.
And they're planning one for August.
Any other oral communications? All right. Let's move on to the consent agenda, on which we have four resolutions transferring funds from the various trusts.
I'll move the consent agenda.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Let's have you take money. Written communication. Any questions or comments? Anything you want to point out, Teresa?
I wanted to point out the very last page about the population figures. I was kind of surprised when we came in lower than last year. I thought, was I quoting the wrong number all year? And then got this email, so that was kind of, I guess, reassuring. So the 212 number I was using last year was correct for state purposes, but it is down to 206, and they kind of give an explanation for what it's worth. So that's our official population for the state, 206455. So I don't think I've ever seen that happen before.
Yeah. I just want to make a quick comment that I really like those monthly narrative reports. They really help me understand the breadth of what's going on in the library that I don't know from necessarily from being on the board, or even from perusing the library website. You know, really, really good.
I feel the same way. What is the process for putting that together?
There's an open file each month, and staff have a deadline for putting their information in. And then between the weekend and the Thursday before the board is due, the board package is due, I take it and go through it and sometimes clean it up a little bit and add some stuff.
I just wanted to, it seemed like there were a lot of different styles of writing, some of them are very effusive, and some are just...
And I could try to account for that, but I've decided it's not worth it. It just, you know, gives you the sense. And,
this is written communication, it's just this, all this stuff. I think, I so agree, I like the narratives about the narratives. And I think it should be its own agenda item, rather than buried in written communications. It's not really written communications. It's not someone writing us. I think it's the staff's monthly report.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. So it gives it more...
I want to read that, and I don't want to go through from page 40 to 85 looking for
it. Okay, I can move it to under staff reports, just monthly report, and I won't talk about it, but I'll just put it there.
Right.
Okay.
If
that's
has a question.
No problem.
Okay,
thank you.
It deserves its own.
Okay.
No, I'm sorry, along with the monthly statistics.
And the statistics?
Yeah, they're just different.
Okay. That's easy.
Okay. Moving on.
Oh, I might just add that I am working on an annual report. I never did get to one last year. Things kind of went crazy last year. But I am working on one. Hopefully I'll have it in a couple of weeks. So my goal is by the September meeting. Or sooner.
Okay. Reports of advisory bodies from friends.
I got an email. There was an executive committee meeting today, and Sherry said she was going to be here tonight, but her husband got sick. So she asked me to report that the friends didn't meet in June. So there is no report. They did have a retreat in June for planning for this coming year, and they're busy as usual, but there'll be a report in September for July and August meeting.
Thank you. Finance committee minutes. Finance committee didn't meet in June either, so no report.
The minutes that are in here are from
the previous.
From
the previous.
They haven't approved them yet.
Member reports. June.
We're open. We had a wonderful I was surprised to see that in there. I would assume there's no reason for me to report anything.
I wasn't sure, and I didn't have a time to get a hold of you whether you wanted to report or not. So we can take it out.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was a great grand opening.
It was fun, wasn't it?
The
neatest thing about it was after, who's the fellow who's working? I forget who's working the table. We had a table set up for new library cards right inside.
Richard was
working it.
Yeah.
And doors opened at 11, and I looked at him every 2 or 3 minutes throughout the whole day, and he was busy signing up people for brand new library cards until 2:21. 2:21 was the first time there wasn't a line of people.
80 new cards.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And Central on a good day does 20.
So that was really
80
neat to see.
New cards. And most of them were Scotts Valley area.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's amazing because you think the people who show up for this would already have library
would be
cards.
The true believers.
But obviously,
it's
not true.
As Anne said, if you build it, they will come.
Yeah.
There you go.
That's great. Capitola.
Yes, thank you. Well, the good news is that our program design consultant, Kathy Page, has almost concluded her work doing the community intake and recommending a library. And I haven't seen it, but what she's recommending is a 13,000 square foot library for Capitola. So that's all great. And we, as RDA directors, had recently let out a contract with Anderson Brulé to do the architectural phase of the program design, now turning that into an actual structure. The complications are that RDAs are going away, so it appears that we no longer have a funding source to fund the library. that 13,000 square foot library has an estimated cost of $7.4 million. And our current funding plan through our RDA agreement will total about $2.7 million. So this is going to come to the City Council in our August meeting. And I think that at that point we're going to have to try to make some decisions about supplementing the financing program and also having a contingency plan on the expectation that the RDA funding will no longer be available. I wish our timing had been the same as yours, Jim. So I'd have to say, like, everything is just up in the air at this point until we have a better understanding of how the state's actions are going to impact the RDA funding, the choices there, how that affects our agreement with the county, which dictates our funding mechanism and the construction of the new library in 2017. So that's where we are. We have great new design, but now there's no way to fund it a lot like Felton, I believe. And so
partners.
In poverty.
And so we'll keep you apprised. I'll report to you, as this thing further develops. So that's my report.
Moving on to staff reports.
Okay, May financials. The year has ended. We don't have the year-end data yet, so it's looking good. It's looking pretty solid for the end of the year. I went through it line by line, and a few things are over, but most things were under, and I kind of know some places that are going to get spent a little bit more, but I think we're going to end the year in really good shape. And to be honest, if we had an August meeting, we really still wouldn't have that information. So they don't even finish paying POs from last fiscal year for another week or two. So I wouldn't have year-end information in August.
You'll have it for September?
I'll have it in September. I did talk to Jack today. I told him he didn't need to come tonight. And I said, well, I have year-end in September. He said, oh, yeah, you'll be fine by then. So it's looking good. Any questions in particular?
Nancy. On page 19, I just, what is, under donations, I guess it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5th and 6th line.
Donations Library?
Donations Library and Donations Library Friends of the Library.
Donation Library Friends of the Library is money donated to the Friends during the year usually for the purchase of books and materials, but can be for other things. And they give us, we estimate 25, although I upped it for next year to request. We only spend what we get.
Uh-huh.
So in this case, we actually got in 106,000, and that's what we spent.
I was trying to reconcile it with their report, the advisory report last month, the Friends report. But it doesn't really. They had all these different categories,
there's no way to.
Okay.
Yeah. And the Donations Library, when people donate directly to the library rather than to the Friends, it goes into this line.
Okay.
And then we spend out of that.
So this is basically books.
Most of the time it's books.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be.
Mm-hmm.
It can be, we can get donations for other things as well. But most particularly the Friends, is pretty much books and materials.
Okay.
Donations to the library can be for various things.
And the money that they gave us for self-check, the $52,000.
That's not in here.
That's not.
They
paid.
They pay the vendor directly. When they pay the vendor directly, it doesn't show in our budget.
Mm-hmm.
And they pay. I'm pretty sure. That was actually last fiscal year, so I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
They pay the vendor. I think they paid the vendor directly on that one.
Okay.
It gets complicated.
When you count the money that the Friends pays to vendors directly, what do they go through in a typical year, or is there a typical year?
There isn't. The reason the Friends used to buy the books and materials out of their own budget rather than working it through ours, and that meant they didn't get the discount that we get, and it was also harder for us to track what was being ordered, because they were ordering.
They used to choose the books?
No, we would choose them, but they would actually place the order, they would get
oh.
invoice, they would pay it, and we didn't have we didn't know what was going on with it. We also didn't get, they didn't get the same kind of discount we got. So then we changed the system, so it makes it, so most of the money for books and materials does go through us. So they're not really paying for too many things directly to a vendor now. Now, they have given us some money for technology for next year, which I'm still deciding how to spend. I'll probably have them spend that directly with the vendor, and that'll probably be about $50,000, but they'll spend it rather than come through the library budget. So really, if it gives us a good discount, then we do it through us. Otherwise, just as soon have them do it. I can't tell you the dollar amounts because it varies per year.
Does that come out then as a report to the board, what that's spent on, say, the $50,000 for technology next year?
Friends? It goes to the Friends board. It doesn't really...
Will it come to our board so that we'll know what the money is?
I can report it to you. The Friends don't have any responsibility, so to speak, to report to you. They are a separate nonprofit 501c3, so they have...
I think it would be good to know.
But I can let you know what we're spending it on, but it's not Friends' responsibility.
Maybe it's a good thing, an annual report.
The Friends will be doing an annual report.
Some recording of what they have.
The friends will
paper trail them.
Right.
Yeah, so that
where do we get
knowledge.
The self-check machine?
Right, no one knew that.
I find it even a little bit
well,
farther.
Well, we
don't
are also
pay for it all. I mean, they don't give us the money. We do the specs and the bidding and
we
the
do
shopping.
Do the, and we do the specs and the bidding and the shopping.
The
we didn't.
They get the bill.
They get the bill. They didn't pick the self-checks. We picked the self-checks. We dealt with the vendor.
They just
sure the invoice is made out to them.
It just gets kind of lost in sort of the overview of the library. So it'd be nice to include it somehow in a PDU. Really.
But it's not. It is not part of our financial reporting. But in narrative, I mean, it will show in the monthly report, and I can also let you know what the Friends have, what we bought because of the Friends' money in a given year. But that's, like I said, coming from me, not necessarily
right,
from
sure.
them. And they're planning to do an annual report of their own. And they'll use that information.
Sure.
They'll say, we spent this money on self-check, so if you donate to us, this is the kind of thing we will be buying for the library. But they don't buy it unless we talk about it.
I figured that.
Quick question.
It's complicated. But
does their fiscal year end in June as well?
It does now, as of this year. This year, their fiscal year used to end at the end of April.
Ooh.
It's very complicated. So this year, they ended at the end of April. They had a two-year fiscal year for May and June. And their fiscal year now started July 1st. Luckily, former IRS guy is the treasurer. So he filed all the reports. So we are now on the same fiscal year.
Yes, sir.
I would tell them the time that they were embarking on a capital campaign, a $1 million capital campaign.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is there any progress or is an update on that?
Yes, they are... they've decided to end that campaign with the money in hand, which is the money that they're giving the library to spend this year, which is about $75,000 or $100,000, depends who I talk to on which day, which number it is. And they are planning a broader fundraising campaign that they're going to kick off this fall, and a little bit of different kind of planning. I don't say better planning, but different kind of planning. And just met with them today.
Well,
but
we can wait. Yes,
I'm sure you'll hear about it. But they've got a very, very prominent person in the chair. So they were making the final relationship today, and working that out. So they're growing up. They're doing really well.
And just a quick comment. There was a request to put something in an annual report regarding the activities of the Friends. But what do we publicly do to recognize them for all of the work and contributions that they do to the library? Is there something that we schedule as a board, like something to thank them?
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
That's to donors. That's not to the Friends.
It's to the volunteers.
Yeah. The Friends themselves. No, you don't do.
We do for them, but the Friends, they have a couple of large functions.
The Friends thank their people.
Right. Yeah,
but
and then we get to go and
the board
thank
doesn't
them,
thank.
No, oh, okay.
Hasn't thanked the Friends. Interesting. Actually, never come up in my career. Actually, nice thought though. could do a National Library Week. When they get this campaign off the ground, maybe, you know, support from the board, you know, official support from the board might be a way to recognize them or something. We can talk to them about what the board, I can talk about what the board can do to help. Okay, so I don't know how we got there, but, oh yes, your question. Any other questions? Then the other good news on page 25 was the updated revenue estimate for library sales tax for the fourth quarter, which is really a third quarter. But I love the way this works. But it looks like about $167,000, and I'm still figuring at our old rate, 0.775 instead of 0.7739, is about $129,651 that we didn't expect. Yeah.
So, and that's not already included in the financials
right,
that we're seeing.
Right, that was not what they included
okay,
in.
So it's an addition.
It's an addition. So I like numbers like that.
Oh.
Okay, meeting room policy. I had started a plan to update a policy each month.
Yes.
Well, that fell by the wayside last year, too. Just didn't have time to do that. So we're back on track, and the first one up is the library meeting room policy. And this is one that's been in need of revision, I felt, since I got here, even though it's not that old. Because I heard from you, I've heard from the public, a lot of people want to be able to use our facilities more than we've been allowed to do. And so we went over the policy and made the changes. I did give you the old policy. It was too much to do a revise and cross out and stuff, so that's why I gave you the new one and gave you the old one if you wanted to look at it, and just gave you the key changes to the policy. I don't know if you want me to go through this or if you've all read it, if you just want to ask questions.
I'm just curious, you know, cutting it from 26 uses to 12, I mean, are there any groups right now that use it that much?
26?
Yeah, I mean, are we just going to be negatively
some
impacting?
Some of the big clubs mm-hmm. are every other week, I think.
That's every other week. That's giving
yeah,
every other week.
That's
pretty unusual to now to be used that often.
There are some groups and some branches that do that.
For the meeting room. And the question, I mean, it's a resource allocation issue. I mean, if you get one group that signs up for 26
mm-hmm.
uses, and then it's
right.
not available to
yeah,
a wider group of people.
Yeah, and it's not available for other things. That's what we mentioned.
Right, so.
How does a group become sanctioned by the library, you know, as being a library group? Like, you've got the chess club, you've got the knitting club, you've got, yeah. So are these clubs, like, connect, you know, like, what if you had a group come in and say, well, we want to be, I mean, I'm just trying to figure out what the.
Any group can use it, as long
so
as they follow the guidelines.
So they just need to pay.
They just need to pay the money and follow
oh,
the guidelines. Now, if it's a library, I believe the chess is library sponsored, so it's a
both,
library function.
Both chess clubs are library sponsored.
There's library sponsored,
okay.
So that's a library function.
So
I think the knitting is planning to use one of the study rooms in Scotts Valley, not the meeting room.
They have been using, in the new branch, they're using one of the study
yeah,
rooms.
Yeah, one of the study rooms is larger for that purpose, actually.
Yeah, and I had a question about that, and I don't know if you know, Gail, or if somebody else does. Do people, I've had people tell me they want to reserve the larger study room, not the meeting room with the kitchenette, but the larger study room. Is that, can they do that? And there's not a charge for that, is there?
There's not a charge.
No.
And we are limiting it when school starts to just being available to students after school hours.
Excellent.
But some groups are interested in reserving it.
But before school starts, can a group?
Are we reserving it though? Did we decide to reserve it, or did we want to see how it went first? I think it was one of those we hadn't.
We do have people that are well. Actually, I reserved it for some people. A writing group.
But we don't. We're not charging. I'm sorry.
Well, that's not charged, though.
But we're not
right.
charging for that.
Yeah. That's
and then we're only going to do this through until school starts, and then the kids have free rein.
For after school hours.
Because hopefully we'll have doors in those study rooms by then, right?
Yeah.
Maybe. Come on. That's 2 months away.
That and our disco ball.
Yeah.
And then
Some of the things in Scotts Valley, you know, they're new to us, so we're kind of taking them as they come.
And the other question I had, when a Friends group or a library JPA group uses a meeting room, we don't have to pay rent?
No.
Okay.
No. Nor does government.
What would be the process by which we would communicate? Because I know, like, during the Scotts Valley Library process, the Knitting Club is extremely well organized. What's the process by which we let them know about changes that we're going to undertake? Or do they already know what's coming?
They don't use the meeting room, they use the study room. So.
Oh, that's right. They're the ones who use the larger study room. Okay.
If we made the study room larger because of that.
But then during the school
year. That was
year,
the impetus. I mean, it made us realize that there were larger groups.
Right.
Rather than making three small rooms, we thought, oh, there is a need for a slightly larger group, but they don't need a full meeting room. So.
But they're going to be out of luck when school starts.
Yep.
For
after school
hours.
For after school hours.
For after school hours. But,
Don't they
they won't be out of luck, actually. We do reserve it for them for Mondays.
Is there during
the larger room, but the smaller study room is still available for Smith.
Thanks.
They have kids in there.
So the answer to Jim's question about how will impacted groups find out, I mean, you probably know that there are groups ongoing that book the room, and you can let them know now if there's any change.
There hasn't been a meeting room to book.
No, I'm saying in the system.
The system.
Not Scotts Valley. The system. So, you know, if you go back and you look at your records and you know that X organization books 5 times a year or whatever it is there a way to just let them know up front, you know, number one, the rate's changing, and number two, the frequency, which won't impact them.
Yeah, well,
when would this be effective? Think of the rate change.
When you want to be
effective. September 1st.
Well, I think we ought to give them a month.
Yeah, I think
so.
Some courtesy
of
a month.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Jim?
Kayla, do you know how many people, like, in the new Scotts Valley Library have requested the meeting room who are for, like, businesses who want to hold seminars? Because I know of a couple people who want to run for-profit things, and they've asked me about running the room, and I refer them to you. And it would seem to me if someone wants to take advantage of that space to make money as opposed to doing something for the community, that I don't know if there should be a different rate or there should be a cap on how they use it or somehow community groups get priority, but I know like two or three people have talked to me about having for-profit things there.
Typically, library meeting rooms do not allow for-profit use. They usually require that any meeting that's held there be open to anyone. That's kind of the standard. And that's kind of how we wrote this, although we did allow the library and the Friends to hold fundraisers, because every book sale we've held in this room or in any of our has been illegal, according to our policy. If you want to go in the direction of allowing for-profits to use it, or maybe you want to limit it just to after hours, we can explore that. But I need some direction and some guidance as to where you want to go with it. And do we want to maybe just, and do we want to really draw a nice box around it, that it's only, you know, is it only in Scotts Valley, and is it only after hours, and what are we going to charge for? It would require carving out a whole other piece that I would be reluctant to just make as the policy for everywhere. But I'm certainly willing to explore it.
I'm not saying we should do a solution in search of a problem, but I know one of the people who's approached me, they're a mortgage broker, and they want to have a seminar to educate people about refinancing or saving your house. And okay, fine, that's arguably public education, but it's so they can make money.
Groups like that, the way around it is that they do offer those kinds of things as educational seminars. No money can change hands at the event. If he wants to hand out his business card and someone wants to contact him afterwards, kind of like the art.
Yeah.
If you're not gonna buy it at the library, but if you want the business card for the artist, we'll give it to you. That is, if the meeting that's held is open to everyone, and they're not charging admission to it, if it fits within, you know, an appropriate educational kind of thing and investing, planning for retirement, things like that, those usually you can carve out. I mean, those are usually okay, but it's very clear you can't charge the admission, you can't sell a book there. You know, your own, I wrote the book, How to Make a Million.
Right.
If I made a million, why would I be selling a stupid book? But anyway, you can't give out, you can't sell the book there. That's the way it's worked other places that I've dealt with. That's different than a private business holding a seminar for its staff and wanting to access the media wall because they want to also talk to China while they're, while they're doing it. That's the kind of thing I'm talking about. We're really not allowing for specifically, but if you did want to allow for it, we could probably work on some more and carve out a way to do that.
I would just say, like in the case of Scotts Valley or for any of the staff, if we run into a situation where things that are for profit in some way, like a mortgage education thing, if that's crowding out an after school group or a service club that wants to meet, or the Ed Foundation's plans for a fundraiser or something like that, if community groups start getting bumped out because it's booked by people who are doing things so somebody can make a dollar, I think let us know and we'll, from my perspective at least, I'd like us to reevaluate the policy. We're not there yet.
The other side, I mean, we're not going to hold a mortgage seminar every week. I mean, they're obviously, but, if it's once a year somebody wants to do, it's true educational value for the consumer, for the community, then it's a little grayer, but it's certainly doable. I think we will have to watch it and see. We haven't had a space like Scotts Valley's anywhere in the system and with the resources we've got, so we may need to come back to you. But if you do want to see adjustments to it,
until you,
we'll see how it works.
If you get a, if you start to have a warning light going on, that
I think I've spoken.
Yes.
Free and open to the public.
There you go.
I mean, you can, libraries do go into different rates for nonprofits versus this versus that, but it gets very complicated, so we just went one route. Poll after hours issue is still not totally worked out. We can't do it in Scotts Valley, for example, until they get a separate lighting, separate lights for the meeting room. Meeting room lights are controlled in the staff area.
I'll be.
They started giving us instructions on how to use the lights, and we're going, wait a minute. So they've got to do something to get us a switch in there. So, David knows about it. Steve knows about it, too. So we have to change some locks, I think, in Boulder Creek in order to make it work. So there's still things that need to be worked out. It's going to be a few more months before we have after hours use fully worked out, but I wanted to get something out there because this has been.
There's not actually language about that in the draft then?
That what?
That specifically addresses after hours?
Yes, it does.
Okay.
Well, actually, it's not prohibited.
Oh, okay.
It used to be prohibited.
Okay.
So now it's not prohibited, but I do say specific procedures need to be worked out at each branch because they're going to vary, and so that would be the after hours.
Sam, you had a comment?
Well, I had a question, and it was going to, and on the terms of use, page 31, the second number four. But where it prohibits groups from collecting any money,
mm-hmm.
and, well, I just imagine that a lot of groups would, in order to pay even the fee for the room, would collect money from their members to cover the $25 an hour. Is that what this is meant to stop that too?
They can collect that money before the event or after the event, not just not in the library.
Okay,
that's,
so
that's
the fee is on the premises.
No, exactly.
Okay.
Do you want, we could, I can make that clearer.
Well, I mean, because I don't, it says no collections may be taken, no funds solicited or direct sales made, except for the Friends of the Library. I would wonder why we have that rule, but accepted for the Friends of the Library because, well, they benefit directly, so. we let them do this, but no one else can.
Because we don't want people selling Amway in our meeting room.
Oh, well, I think that gets to the for-profit thing. I mean, if we, but, so.
The other part of it is the no admission fee and no collections taken. It's the idea that somebody has to pay to attend. You can come to a friend's book sale, and you don't have to pay to get in. But they can sell the books while they're there. What you want to avoid is you can come in, but you can't, because you can pay and you can't. And the premise is that meetings that are held in library meeting rooms are open to anyone.
But trying to have a fundraiser, I mean, that's what friends, I mean, by its nature, a fundraiser is you have to pay to get in. And so I'm just one.
Isn't that kind of an after hours thing often? And that maybe you could put a clause in there about fundraising after hours, like a special event.
Well,
isn't that what you're saying, Sam?
The Friends could do that, but we wouldn't want.
Right.
Right, but the Friends might have a book sale, though. I mean, we hold book sales in all our branches right now.
We do.
Well, Boulder Creek has them, LaSelva has them. You haven't had any? Where do you have them?
We
outside?
We have them in the branch.
Okay.
But we have them in the clubhouse.
You have them in the clubhouse.
Yeah.
They've done them here for the children's book sale.
Children's
been in this very
right.
room. And it's prohibitive. And that seems kind of not right for the Friends to be able to do their support. I mean, it's very typical to the language. A lot of the language in here has been pulled from other libraries and it's very typical to allow your library or your friends to do things that, or foundation if we have them, you're basically exempting them from the policy.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to change that.
No, I mean, I'm supportive of I'm supportive of keeping the meeting rooms for whatever activity open to the public, which means no fee charged to get in. To me, that's not really what a library should be supporting. You know, and really, except for Scotts Valley, we pretty much don't have a meeting room that business is going to want to use. And so I think that type of activity, we can deal with Scotts Valley and figure out what works there or what doesn't work. But I mean, until we had a lot of demand and thought we could make some money off of it,
well,
I don't see why we would
change it,
Well, you know, the what technically is not allowed here, what's not allowed, would be, say, Rotary wanted to use the Scotts Valley facility and meeting room. Well, this is really just meeting rooms. It's not the facility. That's a whole different issue that we're not even touching. They say they wanted to use the meeting room for a fundraiser. So they want to have an auction. They can only get 72 people in, but they would not be able to do it. Because it's a fundraiser, and the only ones who can do fundraisers
money
are the
would
library.
Be changing hands of the
But if the library, if the Friends in the library wanted to hold an event there to raise money, they could.
Well, it also seems to me that a policy is a policy, and exceptions can be made.
Always.
Yeah. So, you know, based on something that sounds really reasonable that you want to do, I think, you know, that as an ongoing policy, it makes sense to exclude those kinds of things. But, David?
Yeah, I was going to comment. What prompted the change in the cost per hour? Was it just, did you look at other rooms and say that's how the going rate is?
Merritt was in charge of revising the policy, and she retired last week.
Oh, okay.
And I'm not sure if there was a rationale behind it or if it was just
I was thinking
pretty capricious and arbitrary.
There wasn't anything in there really about the cleanup or deposit, and I don't want to get in the weeds on that, but it's like if you have these types of uses, making sure that people, it doesn't incur a library cost by having these types of uses.
And that's why we added the cost for the kitchenette to cover cleaning, and there is a clause that we might charge for cleaning on top of it, but it's pretty.
But the one point I want to make is just along what the others were talking about in terms of uses, rather than like excluding those uses, which I agree with, I think it shouldn't be for profit. How do you encourage certain types of uses that we want to see? And like, would you want to have a certain number of days set aside for literacy programs for kids, and maybe you wouldn't charge for them to use the space? So that would encourage maybe the school district or other groups to use the space in that way.
Government agencies have second priority and are exempt from fees for use.
But I mean, to actually,
so school district,
how you communicate it out to...
School district is a government agency, so...
Or like a woman that was in felt she wanted to organize a literacy program. I mean, how would someone go about doing that? Just book the room?
They book the room. Sometimes what you'll find is quite frequently, once people know that there's a charge for the room and that the library doesn't charge, they'll ask the library to co-sponsor. So the library might, you know, a literacy program, the library may say that's in our best interest. You know, we'll waive the fee, but we're going to get credit. It's going to be counted as a library program kind of thing.
Okay.
So it gets advertised as a library program. So there's ways, you know, there's ways to do that that benefits us as well as the individual. So you'll find that people catch on real quick on that one.
So the last question was for that after-hours use. That's something we'd be looking at even for those that don't have separate entrances or just...
Well, the four libraries with meeting rooms have a separate entrance of sorts. This one's kind of bizarre, but it's probably doable.
Hmm?
It can work. You have to train people on how to do the front doors and stuff, but yeah. Direction I'm not recommending we go in is using our facilities that don't have meeting rooms, because after hours you're then allowing access to collections and equipment. We've got computers, copiers, cash registers, even if there's no money in them, but you know, the books themselves and the materials. That's after hours. That would be a liability issue that my guess is we would never get past risk management. Meeting rooms that are separate from, but all of the four libraries with meeting rooms do have outside entrances.
Jim?
When we say that government agencies have second priority and are exempt from fees, the library and the affiliated organizations have first priority, does that mean somebody else books something for a month
that
from
we would
now?
Bump them? No, we wouldn't
bump
them.
No bumping. And then what about, is there any discretion that, you know, like in the case of Scotts Valley that Gail would have, like if one person who's affiliated with a government agency says they want the meeting room for a night, and it's just going to be two or three people having a meeting in a room that can hold, you know, 72 people, does Gail have the ability to say that's not really an appropriate use of the meeting room, or...
They want to pay, well...
Government
doesn't pay. It doesn't really, I suppose it costs us some lights and heat, perhaps, but...
But what the real cost is you're preventing
somebody else
from using it.
Things like, the original policy had a limit that a group was X number of people. And I don't really want to start deciding how many people is a group. And I don't want staff having to decide that. And so if they get five more people, what, are we going to be there when they show up and say, you're a group, you're not a group? I mean,
no,
that would
I'm
be
just,
hard. So
I'm,
I think what happens in cases like that, Jim, if the procedures need to be worked out, but usually your form would say how many people are you expecting at this event. If somebody signs up with two people, or three, says three people are going to be attending, and then they get a request for another group that wants to use it, and they've got 30 or 40, my guess is Gail would be on the phone to that group and say, hey, we've got a request for 30 people. Is there someplace else we can accommodate you, or that, you know, you
right,
can be accommodated?
95 times out of 100, that takes care of the problem. But just in case you get somebody who's not accommodating, is there something we need to put in here to give staff some leeway?
Where do you draw the line? And how do you know who's going to show up? Someone says I'm going to have 30 people, but only two come, and it's after hours, so we're not there to police it.
Maybe we should wait until there's a problem.
Policy
is to go towards the rule and not exceptions. I sort of feel like that would be
for a beginning.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Well, that's why I thought giving some discretion would be good, but some discretion to the
French managers know they've got discretion.
Yeah.
approve?
I'll make the motion to approve the policy.
Do we want to say an effective date?
Effective September 1st. With that, with notice to those that have usage beyond the, or up to the 26, over 12, maybe to 26, so we know those that are impacted by this change.
Okay.
Or as the director.
As
appropriate.
As appropriate. Sure.
Okay, we have a motion. We have a second.
Who seconded? I did.
Oh, Kev, thank you. Any comments for the audience before we vote? All right, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes.
That was easy. It wasn't easy. Okay, transition update. We've made two temporary assignments. Emily Galley is our transition coordinator, and Gail Farthing is the working out of class public services manager. Gail started today, and we started 2 weeks ago.
And she's done a fabulous job.
This is sort of related to the transition, but I'm kind of stretching it here. The ILS, we've moved the implementation date to October 21st from the end of September. So I will be coming back to you in September with a request for closure for a few days, and we'll probably include a staff training day just to let you know we've got a little bit of time now because it's not till.
Watch it.
Just progress that the company's making on the data and all that. The job classifications, specifications, and salaries have been basically laid out, and meetings has occurred with the union. We're now moving on to mapping of the positions, current positions, and where do they, how do they fit in with the new arrangement. And the outsourcing courier, we're going to be doing a 2-week trial to. Based on a proposal from the couriers themselves in August, and we'll be evaluating that at the end of August and then deciding how to proceed. In the meantime, we will be issuing the RFP for outsourcing. The RFP states that we don't have to take any of the offers, any of the proposals that we get. So if the courier's proposal works, then we don't have to, we can stop the RFP process. And that's pretty much it. I think Emily's been spent today interviewing candidates for the interview two of the candidates for the volunteer coordinator for the AmeriCorps position. So, anything else anybody wants to add on the transition?
There's a lot.
Seven retirements were offered. Seven retirements were taken. This is going to make things very interesting because as these people, well, Merritt was gone as Thursday was her last day. A party on the 19th, 11:30 seating and a 1 o'clock seating. And here,
yep.
Right
here.
In here.
Right.
Anybody wants to come say goodbye to Merritt?
Oh my
God.
Yeah.
Two seatings, your choice.
When is it?
July 19th, next Tuesday.
And all the ceremonial stuff is at 12:30 if you like ceremonies. Mm-hmm. And music. You can wear the music.
But we have other retirements then starting September 1st, running through December 31st, so as people retire, we're obviously not filling their positions, so we're going to be doing a lot of gerrymandering to make things work one way or another. So it's going to get interesting around here in the next 6 months. That's about all I can say. Okay.
All right. Moving on to other business.
Work and not review. In September, I'll be coming back to talk about facilities master plan. I've started getting some information on samples, performance indicators for the new service model. Just to let you know, in October, we need to start talking about the process for replacing Barbara, who goes off in January. And the last item, this was an issue that we said we would talk about after the new ILS. Since the new ILS is being delayed, I want to move this one out as well. And so my goal is to move that one to January to give us time to transition into the new system.
Next is the redaction of personal information in our written communications packet. I can talk about that because I was the one that asked Teresa in the past to redact some of that information. My thinking at that time was, I'm not clear that when people are writing to either Teresa or a board member, that they understand that that communication would be public information. I mean, I can say that I would think that personally. I mean, I haven't thought that personally in the past, not regarding the library board, but with other public entities. So maybe it's just me that never knew that, and everybody else does. But I mean, I certainly think we should redact email addresses and phone numbers. I think we would get a lot fewer communications if people knew that their information was going to be public. So that's just why in the past I had asked Teresa when we started, I don't remember when it was, but it was when we were getting lots of inputs and, on controversial topics, is when I sort of had a bad feeling about it and asked Teresa to do that. So. I know, Catherine, you had asked differently, so you have a, I know you have a different perspective.
Right. Well, I just know that all the emails, I've gotten 19 of them today on dogs. And they
only
all have, and just today in this afternoon. But, you know, we get their, you know, and a lot of people sign their name and their phone number. It's public. But I particularly brought it up when we were dealing with the library because I like to respond to every email.
But
I write it back.
If you get an email, then you have their information.
No, when time I get them, they're in here and they're read it and they're crossed out. They don't write me personally. I got them.
So you like to respond even the ones who come in the packet?
Yeah, definitely. They come to you or the library.
Well,
we all, as David knows, we get hundreds of email and we never would think of redacting.
Yeah,
but don't you get them directly on your email? Most of the majority of them, at least my experience has been, 90% of them are coming to a board member's email.
No, they come to our city email.
Or city.
And it's forwarded out to the entire council sometimes.
Because you guys have a button where you click here, your email goes to the whole city council, and you know,
city clerk.
Right.
Yeah.
And so that's not the issue for me. The issue for me was putting it in your official public package.
Well, ours are in official public packet as well.
They're
but
public
the
records.
Library,
I told you.
They're in the library here. I think all the letters that we get.
City council packet.
Yeah. Are in this library. So people get their phone numbers.
It's all public information.
Okay,
all
I may just be sensitive and I'm off base on this. So.
Part of it. So.
You would not be allowed to.
No.
Yeah. John Barrisoni said we could go either way, but I'm making a plea that we know we have the address.
Less work for us, but it's your choice.
Yeah, less work for you.
Your choice, whatever.
I'm off base. No problem.
Great.
But you're just saying just for the purposes of the agenda packet only? But
yeah.
Otherwise, if somebody, other persons wanted to see it, they have the right to see it as
right.
Well.
But
I
understand.
Okay.
Okay.
I
understand.
I understand.
Okay.
The agenda packet.
Okay.
No, I'm
good
with
that.
Can I make a motion that we don't
want to redact? I don't think we need it.
We
didn't have a motion to do it.
Okay.
I just asked Teresa to do it. So
thank you very much.
We can ask Teresa to stop doing
that.
It.
No problem. Stop doing things.
And maybe we'll get less, but I doubt it. Let me tell you. I don't
that's what I was just going to say. Let's test it out.
We get them to the webmaster.
Right.
They're not for the board necessarily. But someone writing me something today, and I was answering her. Her email address bounced back. I tried it twice. Her phone number was disconnected, and that was within half an hour of her sending it. So my guess is she put in false phone number and address because both of them were bogus.
Yes.
It's
cool.
So.
Okay. And then the next other business is we were thinking of canceling the August meeting with the caveat that if something significant comes up between now and then that we would hold it.
If I could also add, I think September, the first meeting is Labor Day.
Yes,
this will be the next week.
September 12th.
It's the 12th.
So our next meeting is the 12th.
The next is September 12th, assuming we keep August canceled.
Yeah, let's cancel August.
I'll move the motion to cancel the August.
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. All right.
In honor of Lee, we'll cancel August.
That's right.
What day is it?
Because Lee won't be here.
August 7th.
What day is it, 7?
You'll send us emails.
Sure.
Good man.
Did you adjourn?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't hear you.
We're adjourned.
I